Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 177. Today, George and I are joined in the studio by repeat guest, Mr. Mario Garcia Romo. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me again. I think this is the third time, right?
So, number three, at least.
So it feels really good to be back and talk to with you guys.
Well, we're very excited to delve into how things have been going for you. I think if people have been paying attention, they saw you back on the track. First step back on the track since the Olympics, they would have seen you pacing our teammates just a week ago or so. So things have been progressing very exciting in a very positive way for you, as we've seen behind the scenes. But now, you know, people have seen you out on the track and see that you're getting back into things. We have a lot of cool little news things to talk about today, and we're coming off the back of a very exciting European indoors. So lots of fun stuff today. But I think first off, we will start off with a little quick bean shout out. Like, George and I weren't here, so we didn't personally receive these beans, but they are from Boston. I don't know. Did you see any of the beans get passed on to Ollie? I don't know who he got them.
I don't know how he got them. I just saw like a bunch of beans in like in the table, I guess, laying around.
Well, we have some lovely looking beans. These ones are from a roaster whose name seems to be Grace Note Coffee in Boston, from Jen, Michelle, and Lucy. Thank you very much. Beans from Beantown.
And then beans from Beantown.
See these ones?
Is that these ones? Oh, this is the second one.
This is the second one.
From Sean. Sean Canary.
Shelburne Falls Coffee Roasters. I'm sure this is surely another Massachusetts one. I don't know. It doesn't have the location.
Must be. Sean and his fiance's favorite spot for coffee.
Lovely.
Boston fans are very generous with the coffee bags. Yeah. Ollie already came back with like six bags from the first Boston trip.
Yeah, we have a lot of Boston-based, Massachusetts-based coffee beans floating around the studio these days.
I bet the density of coffee roasteries in Boston must be like one of the highest in the US.
Mm-hmm. Well, contentious...
Coffee roaster density.
Contentious question. Is Boston a good coffee town or not? Because I thought it was decent, and then Maya said it's not, and she lived there. So if I'm going to ask anyone, it's going to be her.
That's what Maya said too, because I remember, like, obviously Tate is like the most popular spot, like next to the hotel that we usually go to in Boston. But that's, I guess, like a more like a bakery, like breakfast spot.
I like their food, but I'm pretty sure they use Stumptown and their sellouts.
They use Stumptown, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't like Stumptown. Actually, I don't know. I think they're owned by Pete's, so I think they sold out.
We did go to a nice coffee shop the day of the race. Like it was actually quite nice. I can remember the name of it, but like it was a group of us, and it was good coffee.
I feel like Boston's a high quantity coffee location. Yeah. I don't know about
how many Dunkin' Donuts.
That's what I'm like, if I think of like Dunkin', I'm like, I feel like
they're crushing it there.
I feel like they're crushing Dunkin' in Boston. Is that where Dunkin' started?
I don't know. I can't tell
why
you where
are those two things associated.
It's like it's full branding. Like think about all their commercials, or the Super Bowl commercials always has like Ben Affleck, like the Boston like people on it. That's their brand for sure. I'm not sure if that's where it's from, but that's where it's.
I went to Dunkin' Donuts when I was in Boston.
Was it good?
Yeah, I ran into Ben Hoy at the airport, so that was quite nice.
Quincy, Massachusetts.
Okay,
a suburb of Boston.
It all makes sense now.
Maybe it's not technically Boston, but basically. Mm-hmm. All right, so
makes sense.
Basically, is Dunkin' City.
I always thought this is such a random thing, but I always thought of like Dunkin' being Boston, and then when I think about Starbucks, I think about New York. Even though I know Starbucks is from the complete other side of the country, but
you think of New York.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Mm. It's a lot of them.
I guess like near our hotel where we stay, you see more Starbucks at least. I don't know, kind of random. But yes, thank you so much for these lovely beans. Unfortunately, probably no more Boston trips for the rest of the year, so we won't be getting.
That might not be true.
Boston Marathon.
Maybe. Actually, there'll be some Coffee Club presence there. This is very true. I should not say that because, yeah, there will definitely be some presence there for the marathon, which is actually not even that far away.
It's literally in like five weeks, or something.
Yeah.
So maybe 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Coming up.
Yeah, that's exciting times. We won't disclose just yet.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that. Good save. Well done. Well done.
It does. It just Boston just feels like a January through March thing.
Yeah. Well, as you know, we're famous for our knowledge of the Boston Marathon and just absolutely crushing it with that. So
I think our coverage last year was just spot on. I remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All our Boston fans really appreciated the turnaround point at Wellesley.
That was one of your best calls on the pod.
Just I said it with such confidence, and no one corrected me. That's the thing. That's the thing, Mario. If you say something on a podcast, mm-hmm. You just say it with confidence, and then probably 80% of people will believe you.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, because Boston Marathon, very iconic. I'm sure actually a decent amount of our listeners know, mm-hmm. like potentially have even run it. But I feel like when we said that, probably most people didn't pick up that it was a complete falsity, except for all the Boston people.
I mean, like, and none of the, like a funny thing from like the last meet at Boston, obviously there was space and lights, right? And some, like a kid came up to me, and he said that he heard in the coffee club pod that I was getting 50% of the profits of the meet because I facilitated the pacing lights. I was like, oh, no, that was a joke.
did we say that? Did Ollie say that?
There was something about Mario organizing the pace lights. Something. I don't remember the 50% profit.
Yeah, I was like,
did you get those profits?
No, I wish. That'd be a lot of money, right?
That's a good place to start, though. We may as well start with where you've just been last weekend. Mm-hmm. Pacing an attempted world record.
Mm-hmm.
How was it out there?
It was nerve-wracking, honestly. Like, I was really nervous. It was my first race after the Olympics, right? And yeah, I mean, running 220, 221 for the K is not very easy, you know, especially when you know what's at stake, you know, like I was a pacing Jared for the world record.
Yeah, you want it nice and even, like,
yeah,
you
exactly. Yeah, so it was, I was super nervous, like more nervous than usually for the first race of the season. But yeah, I mean, it was quite nice. I feel really good. I did a good workout afterwards in the path next to the river. And yeah, it was a good way to start my season without having to race early on in the indoor season, because we just thought that maybe it was too early for us to like to race, you know. Like, I wanted to like make sure that I have a good training block behind me, and I think pacing Jared was the perfect opportunity for that.
Yeah. For context, your previous race before this was at the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. The Ripper's
Chair. Yeah. And then so what was your injury exactly, and what did the next few months after, like, what are you coming back from?
Yeah, so I had a grade 4 stress reaction on my pubic symphysis, and then I also had a PLEC type 3 injury, which is
no
very
idea
specific.
What that means.
Yeah, but pretty much it's just a fibrocartilage that connects to the pubic symphysis, which kind of like damaged, right? So like, yeah, it was quite a nasty injury. I have felt something since April of 2023, so like it was just kind of like this lingering pain that didn't go away, but it wasn't
2023.
Really 2024, sorry, April 2024.
Just checking the numbers on that one.
Yeah,
it was. I thought it could be possible, but
no. But yeah, since April, right, and it was just this lingering pain that never quite went away, but it would allow me to like work out just like normal, right? And yeah, like after the Olympics, like I was like, well, I think it's the best time to like probably look at it and like making sure that, you know, we are not doing more damage than you know, like possible. And like, yeah, it was just like bad news, but like at the same time good news, because obviously I didn't have the season I wanted last year. So it was a little bit of an explanation why I was not feeling quite the same in racing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that feeling. The uncertainty mm-hmm. before it can be very torturous. And then when you finally get a diagnosis, you're kind of set free because you actually know what was going on, and then you have something to work on and mm-hmm. to fix for next season. So with that in mind, this season has looked different from a normal season. As you mentioned, you weren't really looking at doing any indoor races apart from this pacing job that did pop up. But what races are you, like, when do you think you'll open up, and what's outdoors essentially going to look like, or at least the plan mm-hmm. for now?
Well, definitely we'll start my season pen relays with the mile. I've raced
going back, baby.
Yeah, I've raced three times, the last 3 years, actually, I've been released. First with Ole Miss and then with On. George got me in in the mile 2 years ago, and just last year I ran the 800. So it's just a good way to start the season. I think it's very early on, right? It's April, but it'll be a good way to just get used to the mile, the 1500 again. Try to run a fast time, obviously, or try to get enough points because it's a silver label. But yeah, mainly the goal for that meet is just to like get used to racing again and just kind of like breaking the train a little bit. That's something that me and Dathan have realized, that I do better when I have more races. Like I like big trainings, like big blocks of training, but at the same time, like I just get a lot of benefit from races. So that'll be my first race, and then after that, hopefully Sound Running at the end of May, and then we'll go to Europe, and we are still waiting to like hear from a few races, but yeah, hopefully I'll be in a Diamond League. Obviously, if I could make it into a Grand Slam, meet, that would be amazing, but I think that's going to depend a lot on how I perform in in the races before, and like just to show my fitness and ability to like compete at the highest level in the 100 and the 1500. But yeah, exciting season. I think it's going to be a little different because obviously I don't have the standard now, and my ranking is probably really bad. I haven't even looked at it. I think it's probably like on the 70s or the 80s. But I definitely need those points. And yeah, I'm not afraid of going for it this year. I think, you know, it's going to take a lot of guts. And I think I'm going to try to go for it early on.
Yeah.
Aside from maybe the approach to racing more being slightly different, do you think you'll have any other like different approaches this year to training or... anything else?
I would say like training is going to be pretty much the same. Obviously, like now we're doing some double trestle sessions like every other week. I'm still running, trying to run high volumes of training, a little higher mallet. But especially I've been very intentional with my strength work in the gym with Jason. Like we've been like really like trying to be intentional, just not to recover from the injury, but also like to make sure that, you know, I feel like one of my talents or one of my strengths is just my ability to produce power. And like I just feel like I'm a strong runner. So like just trying to like especially focus on that and trying to like making sure that at least my strengths are very strong, you know. And then obviously, I mean, after seeing, you know, Cole running 7:22 or 23 in the 3K, you know, Jared is super strong. Like Josh, Jacob, like every other 1500 guy in the world right now is like really strong. So that means I'm going to have to be stronger, right? Like, I can be very fast, but if I'm not strong enough to, like, hold into them until the end, like, it's not going to do anything.
Which has been one of your strengths. Honestly, in the past rounds, has always seemed to suit you really well.
Yeah, I react very well to runs, and that's something that I almost feel better with every run, you know? Like, I think that's really a little bit to the racing. But, yeah, like, just trying to get stronger, and obviously, I think I have, like, natural speed, so just trying to, like, keep working on that strength, and, like, obviously... We've seen in Paris that the races now are like, okay, let's run 3:28, 3:29, and then whoever has the best kick wins, right? So that's what we need to get ready for. And yeah, I mean, I've had a couple world champs finals that were like that, you know, and I think like I just need to like keep getting better and getting stronger, you know? Like there is a lot of young kids coming from, you know, like all these champions that are like going to perform very well and going to make things hard. So I think... just got to keep getting better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you just have to, like, your baseline is so high. I think, like, people might forget that you already have a fourth and a fifth at World Champs under your belt.
Six. Sorry. Yari come in the line.
Freaking Yari.
Yeah. Fourth and sixth.
Which is crazy, like, at a young age. And obviously last year, then you were dealing with this injury. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you've been there before, you've done it multiple times, and it's just like about getting back to it. I'm interested how much you'll end up racing this year, because when you said that you benefit from racing a lot and then you want to try to do it more, I was reminded of your last year of college where you raced, was it 30 times?
More than 30 times, yeah.
It's just like, yeah. Do any, I mean, I'm trying to think of any pros do that. Some of the pros ended up racing, some of Mike Smith's guys ended up racing, obviously not close to 30. But yeah.
Do you know who races more than 30 or like 40 times? They posted a graphic about like 2 months ago.
Who?
Nozomi Tanaka.
Oh, yes.
She had some, for sure. It was like 20, I don't know if it was 24 or 23. She had some crazy stat on how many times she'd lined up. It was, I swear it was in like the 40s.
Also, that makes sense.
It was incredible.
I think this year is going to be a year of like a lot of racing because we Grand Slam, right? Like you have, for example, like Jared, Josh and Cole racing four 800s,
right there.
Four 1500s.
True.
And that's before July, you know? So like, and July is like the start of the other season because the end of the season is going to be in September. So
yeah, if you had to like imagine what that's going to look like, the a minimum of 8 Grand Slams races, the a minimum of 3, only 2 1500 rounds at USA's, mm-hmm. couple of times, like that's 10 to 12 races before mm-hmm. Worlds almost guaranteed for those guys. Like, I think you're right. There's
yeah
something to be said for. Do you think that comes, like for you, do you feel like it's actually the races that make you feel better, or is it partly like that racing forces you to almost take a down week? So you're like, your training is mm-hmm. a little bit like more like this instead of just like the constant like progression of fatigue. Do you think that's part of it? Or
I think just coming down in volume like really benefits me. It allows me to like absorb all the training. I don't know like what the scientific reasoning behind it is, but yeah, like just in the past, like, you know, I have like, you know, like for example, last week I ran 87 miles, right? And this next week I projected to run 93 miles, right? That's quite high mileage for me. And I think like the races just make me come down in volume. And it's also a hard stimulus. It's a hard effort that usually is quite good for me. I mean, as you probably guys know, like the hard workouts are easier for me than almost the slow, more like long workouts. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just like, it makes me feel better. For example, after Boston, the next couple of days I feel amazing, you know? And then after we came back for altitude, I felt a little worse, right? But like the couple of days afterwards, I was feeling so good. And I think it's just simply because I was, you know, I went for a hard effort in the pacing job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be cool to see if we can get that out. And you guys are right. Like, I think that is probably one of the biggest benefits of the later world champs is that hopefully everyone races a lot more mm-hmm. because it is so, I mean, we talked about before, it's so stupid how when the champs are early, it's like all the races after it don't matter. And then a lot of people are end up being injured and stuff. But hopefully everyone will be healthy and it'll just be like a nice like ramp up because the races are essentially like this outdoor season is starting at the same time pretty much that it always starts. Mm-hmm. But then it just hopefully goes a lot later. So this should be way more fun. I would love to do, I don't know if it's realistic for us, but I would love to do some version of what I saw like Nico and I think Luis even was doing it last year where they would go to some of those meets in California and they would just do a double and mm-hmm. that was like their workout for the second half of the week. It was like, that
seems that's
fun.
Yeah, that's been a big Mike Smith thing, I feel like. Already, like, Nico went to Washington and did 3K mile double mm-hmm. indoors, definitely last year. Nikki, I feel like Nikki was going to every one of those LA meets.
Nikki already did it at the Dome as well.
And I think
and
not coached by Mike Smith anymore though, technically.
That's true.
And I think doubles are so good as well for the sport. Like in the way, like I was talking to Jared on a run a couple of days ago and he was telling me like how he's never raced an 800-1500 double. And I've done a few of those in college and I was telling him how fun it was to do them, you know, like because obviously I think a 3K, 5K is pretty intense, you know, and like your legs, like your body just has to feel destroyed afterwards. But the 800-1500 is, you know, sore enough that I feel like your body doesn't take a long time to recover afterwards. And it's just like, obviously, more races for the spectators. Like, you are able to, like, you know, like, watch the best runners in the world, like, compete in different events. So I just think it's going to be really good. And yeah, like, I think doubles are something that also I would love to do, for example, in the future. Yeah. Like,
I was so bad at doubling in college. I could do it at conference as long as it was the next day. Anytime I had to run like back to back, like an hour or two later, mm-hmm. I was so fucked for that second race. Whether I do it, like we'd often do it in the Dome early season. If we ran like a mile, we'd come back and like do the 3K as a workout or something. And I would just be so far back. Or like my last indoor conference, I tried to do the 800 mile double and like the mile final was before the 800 final and I tried to like jog like run the mile final as slow as possible. I just beat everyone that wasn't from NAU to like try and stay fresh for the 800 and I was still fucked.
Didn't work. Like, yeah. I think there's something to be said about as the athlete, it's cool to do doubles and to do those types of races as well. We talked a little bit with Maya last week because she was talking about her first few races of the season, and we talked about how as a pro there's a lot of pressure on every single race, and you kind of feel like you have to bring your A game or even like your A plus game to every single race. But I think there's something cool about feeling like you can go race for racing's sake, you know, which is something that we all love doing, and you can do that at 85% and it can still be a positive experience. I know for me personally, it's been really hard because I'm always in this cycle of coming back from an injury or something, and I'm always chasing a standard pretty much, which is literally the least fun way to do this sport. It's literally terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
feeling like you have to get the standard every time.
Yeah, like all my races are based around chasing a standard to qualify. And it's like, that's not why I started running, you know? I mean, I started running to try be as good as I can be, and that's like one measure of it, I suppose. But it'd be nice to do more races where you can feel like you can line up at, 85, 90%, and you can go give it your everything. And I feel like when you do doubles, that's essentially what you're allowing yourself to do, because you're taking the pressure off, and, you know, it's more of a training exercise than anything else, you know?
That's a good way of looking at it. It's a numbers game. The more... The more races you do, it's the same amount of pressure, but it's spread out over more races.
Well, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves, you know, every time that because that's our performance in a way.
So if you only race twice, they both better be fucking
exactly.
Good.
And then the bar is set so high, and then we compare ourselves to, oh, what a freaking Jakob do this week. You know, it's like you see someone like that who's just obviously he does race a lot, and he also does freaking crash every single race. I don't think he has many races that aren't absolutely world class, but it's like it's crazy, you know, to try set those standards for yourself all the time. So
I did find that a little bit in 2023 when I had to run so many steeples. Like I think by the time I got to the Diamond League final, I think that was like my ninth steeple or something in the year. Mm. And it was kind of a nice way to do it because I was doing so many, and like, I mean, it helped that there was some of them, like there really was no expectation because I didn't know what was going on, but it did give you like a lot of freedom in races, just knowing that you're doing a bunch of them and there's going to be another one to do afterwards.
No, in 2022 when I
ran well still. Yeah.
When I raced so many times, I was also chasing the standard. I didn't have the standard when I went to Spanish Champs, and I didn't even get the world standard. I made it through rankings, but I ran very close to it. And it was the same way. Like, it was just races after races, right? And like, I wasn't running fast, but at the same time, like, I was getting so used to competition that just competing wasn't like a big deal for me, you know? It was not like I'm training for 4 months and then I'm competing. It's like I'm racing and racing and racing and racing, and then just got better used to it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, at both ends of the spectrum are amazing, because then you think about the opposite of that is racing the marathon, where you can only race a few times a year and you have to do these massive kind of like, it's like you go like Rocky, you go into like a training camp and everything's like leading up to this one big thing, which is really cool in its own way. But I think on the track in particular, that's honestly, like, I'm jealous of, like, 1,500 meter runners being a 5K guy, because I look at it as, all these races, you know, you can take you can take more swings, essentially, at it. Like, there's just going to be all these good quality 1,500s, and even if you run your PB, like, 1 week later, you can be in shape to go run another amazing one, whereas, you know, the 5K, like, longer events just take so much more out of you, so you can't really have the same, but... That's my dream as well, to start racing more. I was thinking about that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's going to happen.
Have you ever thought about racing more 1500s? Yeah. Because you're very fast. Like,
if I had a world that went a year that went in the way that I wanted it to go, where I got the standards out of the way early, I would race a lot of 1500s. Like, I liked 1500 like more than the 5K. Like racing them. In like a competition setting, I like a 5K more, but just like racing a lot of them. Yeah, 1500 is so fun.
I guess we could have a full OAC 1500. We have a lot of bodies now to fill up a...
It would be fun.
The most logical place to do that is the freaking pin relays mile. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of... You guys had three people 2 years ago.
We had Joe.
Me, you, and Joe.
Yeah.
Last year, I guess good. Just Ollie and Yared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See how many we can get on the line this year. Yeah. I've heard Ritz throw out a few names.
Yeah, we'll see.
Only me so far.
is it going to be a fast-paced race? Is it going to be a tactical race?
No idea yet. I guess it's still like 6 weeks That's closer than it. Yeah, like yeah. It's actually closer than it seems.
Yeah, but you're ready, man.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. I mean, I'm honestly going there just to like, even like if there is not a pacer or like anything, I want to try to have
just
a good effort.
Yeah. And before we move on to Europeans, the goals for this year, do you have kind of goals in the same ways that you would make goals, let's say, last year? I mean, mm-hmm. you did a great job at our New Year's episode saying your goals for next year. How does that look this year, considering everything?
Well, actually, when I was here last time, right, like I said, like I want to be the person that deserves to win an Olympic gold medal. And, you know, like
Cole Hawker was that person?
Oh, yeah. I think like, so like after the Olympics, especially, you know, like I've thought a lot about the Olympics and all this stuff. And it's like, man, like every single guy that lines up in that final probably deserves that Olympic gold medal, you know?
Yeah.
But we are in a sport that is about, you know, like thousands of a second, you know? So it's like every single person deserves the goal, you know? You just have to like know that you deserve that goal and line up in the race day and then taking the opportunity to get that goal, right? So like, yeah, I mean, last year, obviously, I set myself all those high goals and I didn't really get the result, but I, at the same time, I think I achieved those goals. Like when I finished the season, you know, like I remember the first thing that Dathan said when I got out of the tunnel, you know, I remember like it was me and Ollie coming out of the tunnel and Dathan gave us a hug. Jason was there too, Jordan, my brother. And the first thing that Dathan said to me is like, you've done everything I told you to do. It's like, you should have no regrets. And that was true. I was like, well, like I've done everything I had to do this year. I've tried to be the best runner I could, the best person I could, and I've got to this point. And obviously, luck is part of it. And obviously, like the injury is not something that we wanted. And obviously, maybe, you know, like you said, like, oh, you could have like taken better care of yourself. But I was doing that, you know. So like sometimes just injuries happen, you know. And I achieved all those goals. So like for this year, the goal is still the same. Like the same goals I had last year are the same goals I have this year. And I'm just doing it. Like I know I can do it. And I'm just trying to like especially focus a little more on the, you know, the extra, you know, like not so much training, but like things outside of the sport, making sure I'm looking after my family, that I'm there for them, you know, like making sure that I'm a very good person, that I give back to the sport, give back to the community, that I can be, you know, part of something bigger than me. And I think like that's the biggest goal. And then just try to like compete. And like, you know, I'm doing all the training that Ethan gives me. I trust his training. I trust his method. You know, I'm trying to like be the best athlete I can. And then hopefully I line up in that final in Tokyo knowing that I deserve that gold medal and I'll go compete for it. And as long as I do that, I know I'm going to be satisfied when I get off the track.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, speaking of gold medals, looking at Europeans, we have a little double coming from our good friend Jakob Gingy. From our point of view, the main storyline coming out of what was, really cool European indoors. The Team Netherlands dominated and Jakob got it done and just looked, What do you even say about this guy? He just looks better and better.
Yeah. As the European? Who you were just telling us that you've never competed at European indoors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm sure you'd love to.
I've never competed at European indoors, but I really want to compete at European indoors. I mean, especially after this year, like just watching, like it was a pretty cool crowd, I think. Like the stadium from the TV didn't look as big, but like then I've seen photos of the...
Because there's the velodrome in the way.
Yeah, I've seen photos of like the crowds and like there was a lot of people there, right? And
I think Dutch people love athletics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as the European, I mean... Jakob doesn't surprise me anymore. Like I've raced against him since I was under 20 and like he's been doing doubles and like he's been like dominating races since we were very young. Obviously like almost every year it seems like he reaches another level of fitness, right? And I would say if in the 1500 it looked like Isaac Nader and Habs were actually very close to him. Actually like with 100 meters to go, I thought that they had a shot of winning, and I think they were very close and probably they did everything right to like try to beat him, but obviously he's broken the mile world record and the 1500 world record like a couple of weeks ago, so I think he's in a level of fitness that is very hard to reach. But then in the 3k I haven't watched the race, I just watched the results and the splits, but yeah, like 219 for the last k right? And at 334, last 1500, that's very impressive. And obviously, big shout out to like everybody else, because obviously, like, we focus on Jakob, but I think like there was a lot of Europeans, you know, Andreas, for example, you know, coming from the half marathon, running a 3K like that for fourth, like, that's amazing.
Well.
Yeah. So, yeah, very impressive stuff, but obviously we are going to try to like beat him this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do we think of Jingi's new speed suit?
Did not like it.
No. Wait, really?
No. Oh. I'm attached to the old one.
Dude, I loved I
You like the red?
I liked it.
Yeah. I thought it looks, I feel like
I like the blue.
I never liked but sometimes it was like white on top. And I was never a fan.
He did. There was the white version.
The white and blue.
Yeah, but I never liked that one. I thought this one looked fast.
Mm-hmm. There's something about how shiny it was. Did you guys get this thing? It was shiny?
Oh, like the black shiny red on the side. It was shiny.
Yeah. That was probably because it was shitty Adidas, but the red part.
I prefer the old one. I have to say.
I like the change, but...
I was surprised by it. I was like, what is he wearing?
Yeah.
Right? I was like, what is going on here?
That is crazy. He does just seem to keep getting fitter each year, which is...
He's only 24, so could keep going. I don't know. We do have to give a... what would you call this? I was going to say a shout-out, but you don't really... I'm not shouting this out, but a word of condolences to our teammate, Falcon, who did go down in the final. It was very exciting watching the heats. He just squeaked through because it was cutthroat. I think there was it nine in
top,
the front?
Yeah, three heats.
Nine.
Three heats nine, and just top three.
That was it. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, some of these heats are really stacked. And Robert's one was super, super stacked. And he came down to the line battling against OEC Europe's Atawi, who's a 142 guy. So you're thinking, oh, this guy is going to be hard to beat. But turned out, I think Atawi judged it a little bit wrong and ran out of gas. And Falcon dipped him right at the line. But then in the final, it was, I think, initially... Falcon was towards the back, but Jingi had his usual spot at the very back. And then when he made his move around, Falcon responded to it, maybe a little slightly too excitedly. And the turns were crazy. The banks, it was a really sharp bank. And I think he tried to go around and then there was just no space there. And he ended up, it was pretty big fall actually. Like he went down pretty hard, which sucked because as we've seen this in all season already, and as we knew as his teammate, he's in really good shape and that race would have suited him really well. So unfortunately he did not get to cross the finish line, but I think again, more fuel on the fire for him. Mm. And yeah, I mean, that's what you get with indoor racing is the drama.
Yeah.
The falls, the excitement, it's all there, you know, it's all part of it.
Yeah. As a European, I'm a little mad at the rest of us European runners that we always let Jakob do the same tactic as Europeans. It's always...
Do you let him know? Like,
I guess he just... In a way, yes, because, like, you know, like, there is always this point where, like, we are waiting for his attack and then everybody wants to get behind him, right? And he's like, yeah, like, that's probably the best way to beat him. But I think, like, we need to start, like, making different approaches to it and, like, try to, like, maybe surprise him in a way or, like, trying to get around him early on or, like, things like that. You know, so we can, like, try to... You know, like try something different because obviously, like, we just play his game. And I think, like, obviously, he's the best, right? Like, we all know that he's broken every record, every European record. But at the same time, like, you know, like, then can things like that can happen, right? When, like, he passes everybody and then everybody wants to move at the same time. And obviously, that creates chaos. And, like, then obviously, Robert was in unlucky sport this time and, like, he fell, right? So, like, try to avoid things like that.
You say that, but. Beating him from the front is almost less likely because he's fitter than everyone.
Yeah.
Like, it's showing it.
So everyone's just hoping he doesn't make a move for as long as possible.
The Olympics or the world finals, he's mostly just been beaten in the last, like, 50 to 100 meters.
And it's when he's tried to take on a lot of the work himself.
Yeah. Aside from Prefontaine, I'll give Josh that one. That was early. That doesn't often happen. That was getting beaten from the front. But
I was also thinking,
mostly it's like you just have to hope that for some reason you can outkick him because no one's really running the legs off him. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I see what you mean.
Something like, for example, Josh Apri, right? Like, he took over 600 to go. He got around him and, like, he was able to, like, kind of, like, I guess, like, keep him behind him in a way, you know? So, like, just try different things. I know, like, I'm just throwing ideas out there. But
you can put asterisks on that one, I guess, because it's his first race back from injury. Fit Yucca, but
don't give him the hat.
I'll give it. Oh, come on. Well, you want to give it to Josh?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Let's give him a big asterisk.
That's a big asterisk.
I'm kind of, when you say that, I'm almost reminded of Ed Chesirek circa 2015, 2016. Where
Christian Serratos?
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
That
literally.
Was sick.
So everyone was, this is when, you know, Ed won freaking 20 Into the Blade titles in 3 years or whatever. And he was just impossible to beat because he could run a faster time trial than everyone, and also he didn't have literally the best kick, but he had a good enough kick. So it was, everyone was like, why can't, like, we're just handing these races to him. But then it's the same dilemma where, well, you don't want to, you just got to, if you know that he can run a faster 5K than you, then why would you ever go to the front and try make it fast?
Yeah.
All you can really do is wait and try make it as tactical and as possible, because that probably increases your chances as a competitor. So
that's why we question the Ethiopians at the Olympics and Worlds so much, because it looks like they can run a faster 5K. On paper, they can actually run a faster 5K than him. So why the fuck don't they?
Yeah.
But... yeah. In this situation,
this, I mean, year,
George ran freaking hard from the front until 400 to go. And I mean, he was awarded with a silver medal.
Last year at the Olympics in the 10,000, they ran 26:40.
Yeah, they actually did run really quick. And then their 9K, I think they slowed down a little bit, but they were running really quick in the 10K. But
and the 5K was 13:15, right? Something like that.
I can't remember the exact.
Yeah. In
the
which 13, is like a bit, 10s. I mean, like, we're talking like 26:40 is like very fast 10K, and 13:15 I feel like pretty slow considering the level of the guys in that final.
Yeah, I feel like 26:40, that's equivalent to 12:50 something easily, right?
For sure.
Easily.
Especially the way
if
they
not
ran
12:40
especially
something.
The way they ran it, because they did run a really fast, I think like their first 8K was crazy fast, and then they actually like slowed down a bit, which is what they were criticized for. But I think it comes down to, I don't know, like the cohesion of working together to make it fast, I think is difficult. I don't know. But that's what, I mean, that's why Jakob is especially unbeatable in the 5K, because like he's, it's the opposite of his situation in a 1500 where he knows he doesn't have to lead until the very end. And
none of those guys can close with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 1500, he keeps losing because he feels like he has to do something. I mean, this is from him. I don't know if you watched his reality TV show, where I think he's like, after he lost in Paris, I think they were like, I can't remember exactly how they said it, but it was essentially saying like, Jakob didn't get beaten. He lost it, you know, type thing. Like he
says he blames it on his first lap.
Yeah.
He says it was done. If he hadn't gone out in 54, he thinks he would have won.
Which... it's easy. It's
whether or not that was true or not,
it is. It is a crazy pace to go out at if you don't have a pacemaker. I mean, in any scenario, but especially if you don't have a pacemaker. But yeah, I didn't. Yeah, there was a little bit of chatter going into the race about going into the meet about the wave lights, which didn't end up being like a thing, a factor. It was more of a, I guess it was something for the spectators, but didn't.
I'm very glad that it wasn't a factor.
I didn't see them at all.
I saw them flash on like once during the heats. In the middle, I don't know what they were coming on for, and neither did the commentators. The commentators didn't even know what pace they were at. And then, fortunately, it seemed like in the finals, they were only going to be relevant if someone got close to European record pace or something. And both races, 15 and 3K, started very slowly. So, fortunately, we didn't have to deal with wave lights in a championship race, which... I can't imagine why that guy would have even suggested that.
Yeah, it must have just been for the spectators.
Yeah.
That's purely it. Like, no plan for the races to really be able to take advantage of them.
But the championship racing is when it's easy for the spectators. Like,
It is.
Spectators don't.
Still.
Spectators, a lot of them, they don't know what a fast time is. A lot of people, like, if you say 3:30 or 3:40, they'll be like, fuck, I don't know which one is even realistic. But everyone can see who wins the fucking race.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't take a genius to figure that one out.
Distance running is like completely irrelevant. The only scenario where it may add some excitement is, let's let's picture like Sydney McLaughlin in the, like if they put one for the world record and you just see like, oh, she's destroying the world record right now. Yeah. Like that's the only scenario that it really.
Something would, like they do in swimming, I guess. Like in swimming when you watch on TV.
Which is exciting.
On TV, yeah.
But again, swimming's not tactical at all.
Yeah, so, it's because they're just swimming against themselves.
So it only really works for like the sprint events, which are the same, of the same nature, I suppose.
You could, I'm sure they could put that in on TV on a sprint race.
Yeah.
They could easily have that line. Mm-hmm. Like the exact same in swimming.
Yeah, couldn't be that hard.
But maybe, I mean, it's just Usain Bolt every time. Yeah. Every single time they're
that'd
not close
cool.
to it. So
be cool. You have Usain Bolt out in lane 10. Yeah. Just a lane zero.
It's a little, it's a little like,
just
yeah,
just dominating holographic. Every race. I would love to see that. So bouncing off the Europeans and the Yakov talk, do you guys, what do you guys think about his new YouTube channel that he's uploaded two or three times like in a row? It's been consistent, more consistent than me.
I have clicked on both of them. I have had to skip. I definitely had to skip through the first one. I like cars, but I don't like working on cars quite enough just to watch him do whatever they were doing to his first Ferrari. But the second one was sick, the car tour.
I just clicked on the start, but
of his garage. I love that it's got nothing to do with running.
Mm-hmm. I watched the first one.
It's way better than Josh's.
Yeah, but I haven't seen the second one. But I was talking about it with George, and like I used to be a huge car fan, like when I was growing up. So like seeing this side is actually pretty cool, you know. And I think like it's a pretty cool hobby. Like obviously, you gotta have money to have the hobby. Yeah. But it's,
yeah, how expensive is his garage?
Dude, I mean, if sure. you did, you gotta watch episode two.
No, it looks, I've seen the.
It looks like Tony Stark's fucking Iron Man.
He has a Porsche 911 GT3, right?
That's his newest one.
Yeah,
he said
that's a sweet car. Yeah,
but his dream car. I mean, everyone should, you should just go watch it. It's pretty cool. But his Tokyo 21 gold medal. He said he turned into a Lamborghini, a yellow Lamborghini Murcielago.
Murcielago, yeah.
Which,
jeez.
I don't know how much those things are.
Probably 200K
or more. A few hundred thousand euros, probably.
Yeah.
Is he still sponsored by Mercedes?
I'm not sure.
I also remember that for a little bit. He has the most Mercedes, more than he's got like four or five.
I saw where he showed Henrik's car, and it's just like the most beat up car ever. Like, Henrik, you gotta look after your car, man.
That,
the outside
that was a funny
right,
start to
the
it.
The inside was absolutely
I don't destroyed. Know if he was messing around or not.
And they also have a racing team, right?
Do they?
I think they...
Probably.
Yeah, I think like Henrik is the CEO of the racing team. And I was wondering what kind of racing they do. Because obviously, like Scandinavian countries have pretty popular about rallies, for example, which would be very cool, but, you know, very dangerous to it. Or like, I don't know what kind of racing they do.
I think they go on the track.
Maybe on the track.
I've seen videos of Jakob on his Instagram, or maybe he's like his bachelor party. I don't know. He was like definitely
like karting. Yeah,
he's definitely on the track, like racing, like going pretty damn fast in some cars. So, yeah, check out his YouTube, everyone. His name is JakeC12 _.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Is that okay? So I know nothing about cars. If you're in like the car world, do you make like a name like that? You know, like for example, if you're like a gamer, you have like your gamer name.
Do car people have car names? It does seem like that would be his like number plate.
Yeah, you have a number.
That's exactly
it.
That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. So that's like his car name, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Sick.
He's pretty cool right now. I hate to admit it.
Can do no wrong.
He's just like winning every single race.
Yeah.
Got sweet cars. No way.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, honestly. I love it. And also, kind of tangentially related, did you guys see that Whiteman? You guys see the news?
He left his dad as his coach?
Yeah. That's kind of big.
Yeah. Out of the family business.
Yeah.
Where is he going now? Who's his new coach?
I don't think that was mentioned.
Yeah, I didn't see. But his dad, he...
That's pretty interesting.
It's a pretty dramatic post, I guess, because he's been coached by his dad for a very, very long time.
It's got to be like 20 years.
Had a lot of success.
I don't even know. Mm-hmm.
And as we know, he's had a few injuries the last couple of years. And I mean, I'm not going to say he's like old, because I think he's still got like so much running left, but he must just want a change, I suppose, which makes sense.
After an Olympic year, you know, I think like that's the time a lot of people choose to try different things.
I think it'd be interesting to see a change. So he was meant to race at New Balance, and then Didn't race there and then ended up...
He said he was sick, but maybe it was something more.
And then ended up not racing at all this indoor season, right?
I haven't seen him at all.
No.
No. So,
yeah. Hopefully he'll be
It was good a bummer not seeing him in the Olympics. I think he was going to do a great job in the 800. Yeah, because that combination of strength he has in the 1500 and 3K, obviously, with the speed that he has in the 800.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been getting super unlucky, but maybe he's put it down to the system instead of just bad luck. Who knows?
He ended up posting a YouTube video that, because he posts like a few YouTube videos, and he posted one that did explain what happened before the Olympics. And I think they had footage from the, like, literally the exact workout.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah, he was ripping it.
It was like, wasn't like 4 times 400, but they were, it was like 48, 49, 49, and then like 50, and like on the fourth one or something,
he strained his hamstring,
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I made that workout up, but it was something like that.
He was very impressed. He was very fast. It was the type of workout where you'd be like, oh, yeah, you could strain your hamstring doing that.
If you're going to strain your hamstring, that's one way to do it.
Yeah. So
That's something I'm excited about with Jared running Grand Slam 800s, right? If we are going to do more 800 workouts.
Ooh. From what Dathan said, no. Can't remember who it was. Asked him, like, I think they either asked him, are you going to start doing 800 workouts or are you going to change anything like for that style of racing? And I think Dathan was just no.
I mean, you're going to still definitely run very fast in the 800 with the 1500 workouts.
Yeah. I mean, he looked good in the 800 at the
in LA in Montsac. Yeah.
Montsac 2 years ago. He closed really fast.
Yeah.
But I think they're just going to.
The competition he's up against is crazy.
Well, like for him, I think he's just going to have to run it like a 1500 guy. Like,
just come home.
He's
like
not going to be out at the front with those guys.
Yeah, I wonder when Kerr has posted the videos of him running time trials of, I think he's done like 145 around there. I wonder what his splits are. If he does it more even or if he.
Recently?
Not recent. He's done it like 3 years ago.
I remember. That one, he went like 55-50.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so, not like an 800 meter run at all. Yeah, because I wonder.
I would love to see Yara try and do that.
Well, didn't they announce that for the I don't know.
The first one?
Yeah, did Jamaica. They announce who the challenges are?
I think Korea and Bryce.
Yeah. So
who
far,
are both 141 guys.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, Korea and Bryce. I think just two, right?
Oh, no, Wanyonyi.
Yeah,
Yeah. Sorry, Wanyonyi.
Yeah.
Who's Olympic champ.
Yeah, and they're all the guys that go out. Yeah, they can go out crazy fast.
I mean, their first 200 is just like 24, like no problem, standing start.
That's the biggest difference between the 800s and 1500 guys is the first 200. Because then, like, obviously you see, like, the 1500 guys coming, and then in the last lap, it's kind of like a mix. But yeah, 141 is super fast. Like, I guess people were talking about Marco saying that he thinks he can run a 330. I wonder what 1500 guys can run in the 800, especially those that haven't done it so often, you know?
I almost feel like it's, I don't know if suits them is the right word, but I think it's like being the person who can rely on a quick close is nice. I mean, maybe we'll see that those 800 meter guys will just be that far ahead that it won't matter, especially if they have each other. I think that helps them because they're going to be pushing and keying off each other rather than if it was just one person way out in front. I feel like being the person that's like can close is actually kind of nice sometimes, and it'll definitely lead to them all having really fast 800 PBs. I'm certain that they'll all have very fast PBs by the end of the season in the 8.
Yeah, I'm also excited to see 800 specialists in 1500, especially if they are tactic.
Yeah,
like seeing Marco, for example, like in a tactic 1500, I think it could be really fun, and seeing how fast they can close and like how they can use maybe their position for their advantage.
It will be interesting. And an interesting preview of that was the Europeans, where Atawi, who we already mentioned, he lined up in just the 1500 and not the mile. And this is a guy who made the Olympic final last year in the 800, ran 142. I think on paper you're thinking, okay, this is a 142 800 guy in a tactical 1500. He should crush everyone. But it didn't actually play out like that. To be fair, I think he made it hard for himself because he tried to make a really big move early on.
Yeah, he ran 54 seconds from the 900 to the 1300.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
Might maybe that's a mistake not right there.
But yeah.
The commentator gave him a bit of shit too, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
He said, he was like, he was like, this guy's a 142 guy. This should have been a walk in the park.
Yeah, it's what you would think.
Which, I mean, it was harsh, but it might have been a little bit true.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, the Grand Slam hype is growing every week.
Yeah, can't wait to do a proper preview when we know who's in it.
Yeah.
It might depend if, like, which of it, because each week, each Grand Slam, the order changes.
It's true.
8-15 and then, like, 15-8.
Yeah.
Who knows if that will have an impact. Sure, if the 8's first, the 800 guys will want to just, like, absolutely blast it.
Certainly. Do they get a day in between, right, or no?
They don't, apparently.
I don't think they do. Is this a two-day meet?
No, but they just don't get a day in between.
Oh.
Whereas the 3K, 5K guys do get a day in between.
It's a three-day affair.
Friday, Jesus. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think.
Guys, come on. three days? 3 days, yeah. For... Wait, how many races is it? Eight races? No.
Yeah.
Eight and eight? Six.
So 16 races across 3 days? Mm-hmm. I don't know about that.
Or is it 20? Is it 12 times two? Is it 24? I think it's 24 total.
Wait, how many events of groups are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You're right. It's 24. I forgot about the hurdles. Sorry. Because there's short sprints, short hurdles, long hurdles, mid distance, short distance, long distance, whatever they call it. Times two.
Mm-hmm. Times two. Yeah. So 24.
24.
Eight races a day.
That's, yeah.
Mate.
I wonder what the program looks like. If it's just 1 hour, like it's just interesting.
Shit, who knows how much of that we got right, but.
Interesting.
Can't wait for him.
Well, moving on to our next news topic, one that hit close to home. Well, not really, but San Diego World Road Running Champs, something that there's been a bit of chatter about in the locker room, just because it was really cool that it was in the US being held in San Diego, and it was only 1 week after World Champs in Tokyo. So not the most ideal scenario, but then again, a possible double if that's what you want to do. So definitely something that people on this team were considering. And we just had, for example, Joe race a couple of weeks ago at the US Half Marathon Champs to try and make the event for the half. So it's something that we've all been aware of. I was lucky enough to compete in Latvia a couple of years ago, and I had, like, I thought it was like such a sick event. So a lot of hype around it. Well, this past week it's been announced that San Diego can no longer host the event, and they're currently scrambling for a new host, which Dathan said that he knows who it is today in the locker room. Apparently it's the Netherlands. Not sure if that's confirmed or not. But and apparently it's going to be pushed back to November. So not ideal. But Netherlands, that'd be pretty sick.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more the storyline is like, how the hell did this... It's kind of crazy that it happened. And especially because the news came out on, I don't know which day, but Joe said that literally a few days before he was, you know, at the half marathon champs, and there was like a lot of talk about the championships from people that are very, very like involved in it, and they
started to hear that.
No, they didn't know. Like they were talking about stuff that was going to happen at it, as if no idea that like it could possibly not go ahead. And this is just a few days before the news came out that it couldn't happen. So I don't know. It's sad.
It's crazy. All those guys went there thinking, like, I'm going to try and make the team of San Diego. People that won were like, oh, yeah, sick. Book my ticket to San Diego.
Well, especially because think about this.
Like home worlds.
And also, for all the Americans. A lot of them that were planning on doing it in America in, it must have been the end of September, I'm guessing.
What, planned a full marathon?
Planned a probably a marathon, probably a few weeks. Like it actually leads well into that. Whereas.
Yeah, probably was great for like people running New York.
Yeah. Now, doesn't really quite work.
It has to be money, right? That's the only possible.
Yeah. Me and George were talking about possible venues, and I said that I think Honolulu would be it.
Honolulu.
An amazing option. Because
I'd go race there.
Yeah. It's close to Japan. Obviously, the World Road Championships was going to be a week after. And also, they have experience organizing like road races. Like when we race the mile, they also have 5K, 10K, half marathon on the same day. Mm-hmm. So obviously, and also it's world record eligible, of course.
Yeah.
So I think that would have been a pretty cool place.
That'd be pretty sweet.
To me, this event seems like the most like straightforward from a financial standpoint. I mean, obviously there's so much complications when it goes to shutting down city streets. That's the thing, like canceling it this close to it is like, it's pretty hard for a city to host it now because they probably, I don't know, it's like you need a lot of time to plan to close down the city and all that stuff. But to me, it actually, in terms of an actual event, makes a lot of sense for the host place to make money off it because they have a yeah, participation event, which
yeah,
seems like it should be massive.
Mm-hmm. And that's bigger than it, if like, I was just read something a couple of days ago, the entry applications for New York have been like this year, like 2 or 3% are going to be accepted.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's like 50 something thousand people paying $500. Like mm-hmm. if you said World Champs has been held in San Diego and you can run the half marathon before it, how could you, you could get like 20,000 people just yeah, sign
surely
up.
You could market that in the right way and
you get 20,000 people to pay a couple event. Hundred bucks yeah. to run that course or something. That seems like how you would do it.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like yeah. it should work out, but I guess there's complications that we don't exactly know about, but man, getting pushed to November does make it
dude, that's brutal.
Tough.
Yeah.
Hey, no, that's I was
like
looking
pure,
at it.
It's like pure off season.
I was like, man, maybe that'll be my peak for this year. see how my timeline for come back from the injury, but I'm like, man, maybe we'll be back road to wherever it is. I don't know. I would love to go race in the Netherlands though.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking
Road to Amsterdam.
Yeah, Amsterdam. 2025. Like I've never been in Amsterdam. Like how are the roads and like the streets for it?
Because obviously
probably not the canals.
Yeah.
But it's very flat.
Don't they have a big marathon there?
Is Rotterdam in the Netherlands?
Yeah.
Oh.
Rotterdam is in the Netherlands.
Yeah. I feel like Amsterdam has some race, does it not? Maybe not. I could be wrong. Maybe there's a marathon there or something that's really big. But
I'm sure they have an Amsterdam marathon. Yeah. But I just don't know if it's one of the bigger.
I think Rotterdam is in Netherlands and it's pretty big.
It's very
important. Yeah.
Yeah. So stay tuned. We'll see what happens. They definitely change the moving it back a month or more than a month will definitely change the dynamics of the event a lot, which I think was already going to happen. I think for this year and next year, they were trying to have it closer to the like track season so that more track runners could be there because last time it was too far away for most track runners. But then I think the after Copenhagen, which is next year, it was going to China and I think it was a completely different time of year anyway. So I don't know, man, they got to fix these events because it should be such a good event. Mm-hmm.
Should it not be in like the spring?
It should be.
What if, yeah. Should it not be in like April or May?
It should be.
Isn't that like road season, like peak road season? Because between the two,
mm-hmm. there is a lot of road miles in Spain in the fall. For example, in October, November, there is a lot of them, and a lot of the best middle distance guys in Spain do them. Yeah.
When are they taking off season?
I guess they take off season and then they go do these road miles.
I mean, it's really like it could be almost any time of year and it would be better than like literally when all the track runners off season is. You know what I mean? Because even if it was 1 month before Tokyo, you're like, that's kind of a crazy time. But you would get some really good people that are really fit going and competing in it.
Yeah.
Like in the mile and the 5K. So there would be people that would go do it for sure. So even though that sounds like kind of weird, like I think even that would work well. So pretty much any other time
of
year.
I guess they could host it in Tokyo. Tokyo is like they love the half marathon. They love
They're trying to make it a separate thing though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be the only reason. Because there's already going to be a marathon there.
Mm-hmm.
So they do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. World Champs does have a marathon.
It has a marathon.
Yeah.
So they do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll see what happens with that.
See if Road Worlds makes it past the first edition. Like, there's only the second one and it's already falling apart.
Yeah. It's
come on, World Athletics.
To me, it's like there's certain things that are no-brainers. And I know everything, like you said, is financial, like it's money stuff. But it's like, why do we not have just like World Cross every year, World Road Running every year, World Champs every year, and actually make it so that the schedule is consistent and they work well together so you can actually do it. I mean, I know, yeah, no one wants to host them now because it's money and there's got to be like some better way to do it. But man, our sport would just be so much cooler if it had that and it had that consistency. So I guess that's what like Grand Slam and stuff are trying to do. But yeah, is European indoors every single year?
Every 2 years. So there is, but there's a lot of European competitions, for example.
Because you guys have the cup as well?
Yeah, this June in Madrid, there is the European Team Championships, which is something that, for example, I would love to do this year. And yeah, it's a different format, right? It's, you're competing for your country. Like, obviously, like, tactic races mostly in distance, you know, but like, it's very fun. And also, like, I mean, I think Cinta competed at the last one. Mm-hmm. And Italy won. So, like, yeah, obviously, it's very fun to be to compete for your country, but more as a team event, right? Which is not something that we usually get to do.
Yeah, it's cool, though. Mm-hmm. More of that type of stuff.
Yes. I think sweet. That World Roads, for example, this year, the good thing about it was that it was so close to World Champs that you wouldn't have to, like, specifically prepare for it. And also, like, Japan to San Diego, I guess, it's still hard travel, but it's doable, right? So, like, I think the main things would be easy for athletes to do, and also something that doesn't involve like having different picks along the season, right? Which that was perfect, for example. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm interested to see where they base it off and if it's close to the World Championships.
Yeah, no, it totally changes it, because that was cool, that idea that it would be close. We could have seen, Jakob compete in the half marathon there.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good. That was good. But yeah, I mean, I guess last time, even though it was far away, it wasn't like Hobbs still did it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where he set the world record.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us, after watching that World Roads, like, we're like, oh, that's a pretty cool thing. Like, it would be cool to do in the next one, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't speak highly enough about it. On to our next news. I don't know. Where do we want to go next? We have a couple. Well,
what do we got left?
It's actually not that much left. We've done it. There's a couple of options. NCAAs, which we should talk about, which is, I guess, this week. It's so hard to stay keyed in. We have the Save the 10K event, which I think everyone just wants to get George's take on that. And then also there's the Sam vs. Sam race in New Zealand. Take your pick.
I guess two are previews and one is a recap. We could just, if people haven't already seen it, the New Zealand Championships just happened last week.
Oh, that was the New Zealand Championships. I thought it was just a race.
Come on.
No. It was just a race.
Right. big meet. Biggest meet in the calendar in New Zealand. New Zealand champs. I was not there, obviously. I need to get back for it 1 year, but I haven't been since before I came to the US. And the senior men's 1500 was Sunday afternoon. And the talk of the town was Sam Tanner, two-time defending champ, I think, versus under 16 world record holder Sam Ruth, Battle of Sams. And it came down to a final 100 meter sprint with Sam Tanner. Tanner led like the last probably K, I think, just a bit of a wind up after a slow first 400, and come down the home straight, Sam Ruth, the youngster, comes wide, and there's a big lean at the line, and no one knows who won. And there pops up on the screen that they tied in time. It's like, all right, we'll go to the 1,000th. Tied the 1,000th.
Crazy.
Literally inseparable. So they both got a gold medal.
And they're both coached by Craig, too.
And they have the same coach, same training. Yeah, they train together. And their name is both Sam.
One of them's 15.
It's pretty funny.
And one's 25.
Yeah, and one of them is 10 years older than the other.
And he's not even old.
And he's pretty young, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it is another crazy performance at that.
Imagine if that happened at the Olympics. I mean, obviously it happened in the pole vault. Okay, like,
that's my
tied
question.
Tied to the 1,000th of a second.
Do you think they couldn't have, like, if they tried really hard, like, with the photo finish camp picture, like,
I don't know.
Who won?
Sam posted the photo on his Instagram.
And it was actually hard. Like, it was impossible to, like, tell where Sam's chest was. So I think that was also part of the reason, right? Like, I guess Sam, I don't know his last name.
Ruth.
Ruth. Yeah. Like, his chest was visible, right? Because of the side of the camera. But, like, Sam Tanner's chest was invisible. So I guess that's part of the reason why they also give it the tie.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cool
tie. So wholesome.
Line. Yeah, it's cool. Very cool. Very cool tie. And they're both very happy.
And also running, they run 3:44.
41. Yeah, I think so.
Which is for a 15-year-old.
For him, that's nothing.
No, but like, for him, might not be nothing, but like, 3:44 is crazy for a 15-year-old. Like,
I think his world record's 3:40.
somewhere around
341, 340.
That's
a month or two ago.
Yeah, low 340s for sure.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Very crazy.
Unreal.
But that was New Zealand champs. Some other stuff happened. Hamish won the high jump. Chaka, Olympic champ.
Good on him.
Good for you, Ham.
Where was it?
Dunnis.
Dunedin. Oh, Dunedin.
Bottom of the South Island.
Lovely.
Very far away.
Lovely place.
Not as far as Perth is for Aussie champs, so.
Yeah, bit of a trek. Bit of a trek indeed.
Yeah.
Maybe a save the tank kit we can talk about another time because it doesn't happen for like a long time. We can get your opinions on that.
I did get a couple tags in that post.
Really? Yeah. I think I saw that some actually. Yeah. But so NCAAs, we're talking before the show that we don't know that much about what's going on in NCAAs, except Mara did bring up that now they're running literal good pro times. So we know about all of those. So we'll give a kind of shortened preview of, I guess, maybe a few of the men. Like, all we can really talk about well is mostly the men's distance events, to be fair. We don't really know what's going on.
We know some
on.
Of the women.
Well, we can try the women's as well. I'm just scared it's not going to get, like, we're just not going to know. But what's interesting about the NCAA indoors is that people don't always run their best events. And that's, once again, that's what we're seeing with the two top times all time in the mile, not competing in the mile.
Me and Mario already talked about that.
Crazy thing, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
I guess as mile indoor NCAA champions right here.
Yeah.
I think Mario thinks they're dodging it.
You think so?
Well, I think it's just like having...
It's less predictable.
Yeah, it's less predictable.
It's the only one, it's the only thing with rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has rounds and also like...
It gets tactical.
It gets tactical, right? But also like I can see why choosing the 3K over the mile because the DMR, right? Like initially that was my plan when I...
That's what a lot of people try and do.
Right.
That double has become so popular.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah.
So Jarrett, no, did Jarrett do it?
Yeah, Jarrett did that. Yeah,
yeah,
22. Yeah, but I think it's just the mile is so like
so like, hard to win.
So hard to win, right? Like, for example, I think Nathan, right? Like, he hasn't run under 350 this year, but obviously Nathan is a great championship racer. I think he has a very good chance of like you know winning another title because
he's the
won.
Top seed now. Yeah, 350.7.
Mm-hmm. And then you also have like other people that have run like very fast times in the mile. You know, like 348 to 351 in the mile. Might seem like a big time difference, but it's not that
in
big.
In a championship race, I feel like that's basically the same now.
And
like if you run 348 or 351, you're really good, and it's going to come down to the race, I feel like, not your PR.
And I think, obviously, like a lot of coaches prioritize the team victories, right? So, like, looking at UNC, for example, you have Parker, you have Ethan, you have the DMR, you probably have, like, older events as well. Like I think like it's just you know like they have a good chance of finishing on the podium, so they're probably trying to maximize also their points.
I think it's nice to just take the pressure off for sure. Mm-hmm. Like yeah, it would be exciting to have everyone in the mile, but I think for them they probably it is nice to do the DMR is such a we all love running the DMRs. It's just like we never get to run them, so if you get to run it at nationals, like that's a really cool thing to be able to do. And then if you have the 3K as well, if you're a good miler, these guys are really good 3K guys. It's like, yeah, it's just...
You do get a good shot at winning, not honestly winning both, especially for those guys. I mean, and I guess Ethan is also the top seed in the 3K.
I guess,
so.
Yeah. Parker, Wolf also qualify in the 3, right? So they could have a combo of Ethan, Parker in the DMR, which is probably one of the best DMRs that have ever assembled in the NCAA.
Yeah, but they lost conference, so they can't be that good.
They did. They did lose. But it's interesting that Parker's not even in the 5K.
He hasn't run a time in the 5K.
Yeah, he didn't end up running.
He did run the 3K after NCAA Cross.
Has he? I haven't seen him race much since.
Only conference, I think.
Conference.
Mm-hmm. I think he got that. He got sick when he was supposed to be at BU or something.
He did look good in the DMR. I saw those last couple laps. And like he, I mean, obviously the ACC DMR level is really high right now.
Crazy.
Like you have Wake Forest, I think, coming in third when they run like 9:17, like a week before, and you have also, I guess, Virginia. You have VTech, which won, I think, DMR, and then UNC. So obviously, four very good teams that are
going to
be.
Ben Thomas is just a DMR
legend,
producing legend.
Yeah,
that dude knows how to coach a DMR. I remember when VTech won with like Neil Gourley and Those guys back good. In.
That was when they were underrated as well. Yeah. That was like Ben Thomas's rise, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Ole Miss won the year after.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
With another legendary squad.
Son Toby and I think Ryan Menahan was there. And then
Craig. Is Craig on it?
I don't think Craig raised the DMR.
Oh, really?
NAU didn't qualify a DMR again.
Really? Then they went for it?
I don't even know if they did.
Yeah. It's a
We're
tough
not
one.
A, not a good DMR school. It's a tough for one. For some reason.
But in the mile, UW, have they won 3 times in a row now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also the other titles.
They've won.
Joe Wascom was the first one to win in 2022 when he beat me. And then I think it was Luke Hauser and then Nathan Green won the others. And then Luke Hauser won again. And then Joe Wascom won again.
That's so no one has crazy. Won since you won
since
indoors?
Since my NCAA.
That feels like so
That's
long ago.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And they have the, in the mile, they have the top 2 seeds now.
Who's second?
See, it's like Ronan. I haven't even heard of him before. 351.
Never heard his name
how's
before.
How's that possible that this guy's running 351 that we haven't heard of?
Oh my gosh.
No, it's NCAA. I mean, it's scary. Just competitive. Yeah. It's
scary.
Colin Salami is in the mile, I believe.
Yeah, he's in there. He's same as speed. Fawud Masoudi. He's been a bit more quiet recently, but he's won the 3K, I think, before.
Yes, he won in the 3K Indoors. A couple of years ago.
I think 2 years ago.
Yeah. We got the young stars from Oregon are actually coming through, like Simeon. He's got the 6th fastest time. He ran a 3:52. I don't know if Connor Burns ended up qualifying, but he won Big Ten title, so those guys are getting pretty legit. I think I'm most excited for the 3K because you have Ethan Strand, Parker Wolf, Yassine, Liam Murphy, Gary Martin. That's your top 5. And then you have
That's pretty sweet. Yeah.
Then you have like Colin Solomon is like in there, Drew Boz. Drew Boz is doing the double. That's sick. Adam Spencer repping Wisco. Mm-hmm. Just the thing is, every single name on the list is like a crazy name. I don't know if it was like this when we were there, but like everyone that's qualified has run so fast that they're all studs. They're all stars, you know? It's like it's tough to even preview it because you don't want to like leave anyone out. But I think that race is going to be very interesting. I think Ethan Strand is going to be very hard to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
in the 5K, I mean, he closed in 26 seconds for the last 200, running 13:26.
Yeah.
Which was, I mean, it's pretty fast.
It's very fast.
Yeah.
Very fast.
Yeah, he will be hard to beat. Someone like Liam Murphy, like that dude has an insane kick, actually.
Mm-hmm. And it depends how the race plays out, right? Like you have Adam, for example, I think is a great racer and obviously very fast. You know, he's made the Olympics in the 1500, like, he has a lot of experience. I think like in a slower race, like he could like also have a very good shot at winning. So
yeah. And the 5K, like Lee Murphy's doing the double and he's got the 3rd fastest time in the 5K at 13:10 as well. You got Hubtum in the 5K as well though. So it's like you got then like there's more 5K, 10K guys hopping in that one. There's a lot of them who are very fast. So it's gonna be good. It's gonna be really good.
The 100 with the Aidan McCarthy.
Yeah, shout out to
Cal Poly. That was amazing to witness also in BU, like 145.1.
What was his PR before that?
I think 146 high from indoors. Yeah.
But was 145.1. Was Van Hooy there?
Yeah, he was there.
Nice. And Van Hooy is just such a good coach.
Yes.
Like college mid distance, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was great to see like Aidan, you know, like I think he's had also like 2 injuries in the last year and he was also sick, I think. So like, him running 145 after all of that and also 3:52 in the mile because he is scratching the mile.
Really?
So like, yeah, I mean, it's just super, like a lot of strength, obviously, as a 1500 guy running 3:52 in the mile, but also like 145.1 indoors is like really, really good. We're talking at world level good. So that's also going to be exciting to watch.
Yeah. So is that our preview?
The 3K sounds the best.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think it's going to be good. I am interested to see
out of Virginia Beach.
Is that where it is?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Man, isn't
a nice trip?
Isn't that like that's like a resort place? Well, maybe not a resort place, but that's like a
this like a
beach
holiday
destination.
Yeah.
Damn, would not expect to have an indoor track meet at a place like that.
I think it's nice. Is it Liberty University or I can't remember what. If there's,
it's not at the Liberty Track.
Okay,
it's, they have an indoor track in Virginia, but it's not this one.
Okay,
it's like a convention center, like the Alabama one,
or the Crossbacks.
Yeah,
really?
Where we went.
Interesting.
Kind of like that, I think.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be amazing races. It'll be interesting to see what Parker Wolf, what form he's in, if he can throw down or if he's, I don't know, maybe coming back from something. But either way, some crazy racing and just,
We'll be watching the women, even if we don't know as many of them.
Yeah.
Bunch of NAU women qualified.
Really?
They're good. Yeah.
Like both, I mean, like they're just running so fast that I feel like college runners now, you know, are becoming way more relevant. In the sense of like the pro running world as well, it's not like there is college and there is pro running. I feel like, you know, like now when you talk about trials in the summer, I think that you have to include them. And
well, that's the big debate. I mean, I feel like a lot of people say collegians shouldn't be able to run with pros, and vice versa. I feel like that's a MOBA take. I'm pretty sure
in the middle of the season or at championships trials.
Ever, I think. People like if you want to run professionally. You got to be a professional runner.
People do say there should be separation. I almost said segregation. segregation in the meets between collegiates and pros, which I can see that argument.
People, I wonder what the collegiate record would be.
You know, only collegiates.
I mean, I get that, yeah.
Still pretty quick, probably.
Like, not a Milrose, obviously. Yeah. Or
I,
BU.
I kind of like that we are racing against. I guess I'm biased because as a college guy, it was just great to like race against pros at world champs. You know, you guys also made you made a world championship when you were in Wisconsin. I think it's just great to be able to race pros, and I think it's also good for the sport because it's like makes you better, right? Like it's just way more competitive. So
yeah, I like it.
Yeah,
I didn't hate it at all, but I think some people. I'm trying to think what the main argument is. I think people say that maybe it waters down. They think like the professional sport side of it should be like only pros and maybe having collegiates.
I think it dilutes the... I think collegians should be able to run pro meets. I think pros... It's almost worse going the other way when a bunch of pros or a few pros like sprinkle in collegiate meets. Yeah. And I feel like that dilutes especially the indoor season.
Yeah. I guess it's like, it's just one of those things that's clearly like not that big of a deal in our sport. Like right now, it's not like it's like an issue. But
meet dilution definitely is. Like there's way too many meets. Like there's a meet every single weekend.
Yeah, I guess. No, you're right. That is a very big issue. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just thinking in the context of how the sport's currently like organized and how it works right now. It's like, I'm just thinking that like for the pros, like the more they race, the better, I guess. But it is,
We definitely need more racing.
If you were going to completely rehaul it, I would be all in for creating like professional only leagues. But that would
create but some they should
big
race,
restructuring.
They should race more, but there should be fewer opportunities to force people to go to the same places.
Yeah, that'd be sick. That'd be cool.
Let's see how Grand Slam does it.
Yeah.
Which is basically that.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Well, Mario, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been lovely to have you on once again. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the fans out there?
No, yeah. Thank you for having me, guys. And yeah, excited to just being able to like, you know, train, compete with you guys. I'm excited for this other season. I think it's going to be really fun to like, for example, traveling in Boston with the team was amazing, you know? And I think, just excited for that. Excited for Penn, which will be the start of the season. And excited to just try to achieve those goals this year. And obviously be back here probably talking about them, hopefully.
That's the dream, isn't it? Well, we're getting excited for all that too, especially Penn. Little early shout out that there will be big coffee club presence there as every year. So start putting that on your calendar. But that's it from us for today, guys. Episode 177 of the Coffee Club podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you guys all again next week.
Bye-bye.